is Mock versus City of Kent.
Good morning. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for a rebuttal. May it please the court, my name is Nelson Fraley. I'm representing the appellant this morning, Mr. Mock. I think I've oversimplified this case during the pendency of the time that I've had it, including at the trial court level, but I don't think that that simplifying the case detracts from its importance. In essence, what the case is about is a statutory provision in the City of Kent which allows for officials and or its employees who are investigated, and specifically in this case investigated, for conduct as a result of them being City of Kent employees. And in this particular case, we have Mr. Mock, who is a sergeant with the City of Kent Police Department, who was investigated by the FBI for allegedly tipping off an eventual convicted individual, specifically two, a Mr. Mark Bryan and a Mr. Andrew Gagley. During the course of the investigation, it was claimed, never proven, it was claimed that Mr. Mock had tipped off Mr. Bryant with respect to the FBI investigation. However, as far as the record is concerned, the only individual that could have informed Mr. Mock or Sergeant Mock at the time was an assistant chief who testified he provided none.
The statute requires that if you're threatened to be made party to some litigation by reason of the fact that such a person was, in this case, an employee of the city, what was the reason, from your perspective, that Mr. Mock was threatened to be made a party to this criminal case?
Well, specifically, Mr. Mock was informed on in September of 2013 by investigating officials within the FBI and, I believe, Homeland Security.
Well, the reason was because of statements that he had made to a certain person, or alleged to have made.
Exactly.
All right.
Yes.
And the reason that those statements were made, what did that have to do with Mr. Mock being a police officer?
Well, and I think that therein lies the conundrum, Your Honor. And specifically, we don't know what statements were made by way of the record, by way of any of the testimony.
When he went to make those statements, did he go to speak to Mr. Bryant, I think his name was, because he was a police officer?
Yes. The argument is that, yes, he was going to speak to him as a police officer of the allegations.
He went in the course of his official duties, he went to speak with Mr. Bryant.
Well, as I argued to the trial court, he was certainly in uniform. He was in his police squad car. And part of his duties at the time were to basically have or foster relationships with the community.
And I think you also conceded to the trial court that if he had went and robbed a bank while he was in uniform and drove there in his police car, that that would also be in the course of duty, and he would be his legal fees would have to be covered.
Well, I argued that certainly from the standpoint that if he had done something like that, that I believe that there's an exclusion to that just contained within the statutory scheme of the Kent Municipal Code. But specifically, as the court touched on, when we look at the statements or conduct on the part of Sergeant Mock, the only evidence in the record is his admissions with regard to having two contacts with Mr. Bryant. When we look at the official notification provided to Sergeant Mock on September 19th of 2013, It just says that we're investigating you for obstruction of justice. But in terms of an investigation specifically, there was none. There was none by the city of Kent Police Department, specifically the chief, who was authorized to conduct that investigation, but decided, I'm going to defer that to the FBI. But there never was an investigation. And in fact, there were never charges brought. Charges were never brought. There was never an indictment issued by the U.S. attorney for any conduct that Mr. Mock undertook or allegedly undertook. And specifically, shortly after, approximately a year after he was notified of the investigation, he decided to retire. With respect to the statute, the city of Kent argues specifically that Officer Mock should have known that his conduct was illegal or potentially unauthorized. The problem is, with respect to
you don't agree that a person has to be engaged in official conduct then at the time of the conduct that causes the investigation in order for this statute to apply or this ordinance?
According to the notice that was provided to Mr. Mock by the FBI, he was engaged in an official act, and specifically. The notice talks.
Didn't he agree, though? Didn't he admit that he wasn't engaged in that? It was his personal business because he was angry at Mr. Bryant was the reason he went to go talk to him.
Which one of the times, though?
The first time when he went to the place of business of Mr. Bryant. The second time he was injured, was he not? He was at home and not even on duty at that particular time.
And again, therein lies the conundrum, Your Honor. Yes.
I'm not sure I see the conundrum, though.
Well, as far as the allegation is concerned on the part of the FBI, they don't point to any specific act. It's simply as a result of the aftermath, and I think that, at least from my perspective, the snapshot in time that we're taking goes back to 2012.
In the record that shows that the FBI was investigating him for some different time and place disclosure than the two that Judge Spearman described?
The only thing that I can point to, Your Honor, is actually deals with the June time frame of 2013, and specifically, at least as of that period in time, there were allegedly acts that predated the two that that Mr. Mock admitted to. But again, which of those acts? Oh, actually, the other act would have been for the niece of Mr. Bryant, who talked about his or her uncle claiming that he had a Kent police officer in his back pocket.
Well, listen, I'll hold my question.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Jeff Grendelin for the City of Kent. The trial court properly granted summary judgment in favor of the City of Kent in this case. The city does not and cannot defend employees accused of private misconduct unrelated to their official duties. And there are three reasons for this. First of all, the municipal code that provides for defense and indemnification of employees requires that an employee be made a party to a legal proceeding by reason of the fact that such person is or was an employee of the city. That's basically an official acts requirement. That is consistent with the enabling statute, RCW 4.96.041, which authorized a municipal ordinance like this. And that RCW says a municipality may defend an employee in a legal proceeding arising from acts or omissions while performing or in good faith purporting to perform his or her official duties. The second reason
The ordinance that you're
that we're discussing here does not use that language. You're just asking that it be imported or implied into the language that the ordinance does use?
Well, I think that I've got two responses to that, Your Honor. One is, as you've noted, the ordinance does not mirror the exact language of the statute. But it's the city's position that the requirement in the ordinance that says by reason of the fact that such person is or was an employee of the city is the same thing.
Isn't that a little broader than the language of the statute, the authorizing statute?
It may be, Your Honor. I'm not sure that the two are coextensive, but in this case, they accomplish the same thing.
Does the statute limit the authority of the city so that we have to read the ordinance in the context of the boundaries of its authority?
I believe it does, Your Honor. It is the statute that authorizes municipalities to...
Could the city agree by collective bargaining agreement, for example, to provide greater indemnification than the statute authorizes?
No, I don't think it could, Your Honor, and that would get us into the area of the third reason, the constitutional prohibition on gifts of public funds.
Well, but if he falls within the statute, it's not a gift, is it?
Well, I think I might have misunderstood Judge Leach's question. I thought the question was, could the city agree to provide greater defense or indemnification than the statute
provides? Agree to provide indemnification, a collective bargaining agreement. Let's say, for example, any time you're sued in an incident in which you were wearing your official uniform.
No, I don't think it could, Your Honor. In that case, for instance, an agreement like that by the city would entitle a police officer who was in uniform, maybe during working hours, who tracks down and assaults his ex-wife, would be entitled to a defense. Well, that is,
isn't there an exclusion, though, about the? I mean, if he reasonably knew that it was unlawful, which I think in that circumstance it would be unlawful, the statute, the ordinance wouldn't apply in that circumstance, would it?
A different example. His son is marching in the 4th of July parade. He wants his dad to come along with him. His dad decides he's going to wear his police uniform because he's going to go to work an hour later and he hasn't got time to go home and get dressed up. And after the parade, on the way to the police station in his private vehicle, he gets in a car accident through negligence and no intentional misconduct. Could the city indemnify him then if it chose to?
On his way to work before his shift had started? Is that
right.
The question?
He's just on his way to work. It's not part of his job to be driving. He's not in a police car, so he's not bringing the police car from his house to the station. It's his private vehicle.
So I'm not sure that
he's in uniform and he isn't committing a crime.
I'm not sure that this court needs to decide that question, but
maybe we don't, but what's the answer to my question?
I don't think the city could indemnify employees for torts arising outside of their official duties or outside the scope of employment.
So you think there's a constitutional limitation, and the constitutional limitation is the employee has to be engaged in official employee activity?
Yes, Your Honor. And I'd also like to emphasize for the court that that there's been no contention made in this case by Officer Mock that anything he did actually did entail his official duties. Officer Mock's only argument is he thinks one of the things that may have led to the federal investigation of his conduct was something that occurred while he was on duty wearing his uniform. But he admitted in his deposition that he confronted the gun-dealing suspect, the drug-dealing suspect. He confronted him out of anger, and he conceded that nothing about that conversation, that he had no official reason for that contact.
That's the contact at the body shop?
That's the contact at the body shop, which is what Officer Mock contends must be what caused this criminal suspect to tell an informant that Officer Mock was in his back pocket and informed him about an investigation. Now, that's not what the city understood the investigation was about or what the feds were actually investigating. The feds, and this is in the record at Clerk's Paper 73 is a letter the federal prosecutor sent to Mr. Mock's attorney explaining the basis for their investigation. And the explanation in that letter is that the tipping off of the criminal suspect had occurred during a phone call in January of 2013 while the suspect was at a gun show. Mr. Mock, again, conceded at his deposition that he was not on duty at that time and that there was no official reason for that phone call.
And does he challenge in any way that's shown in the record the credibility of the federal explanation?
Has he challenged the credibility of it?
Yes.
He has denied that he tipped off.
I understand he denied, but that's what precipitated the federal investigation. I thought I heard counsel argue there were some things in the past different from these events that we've been talking about that were part of what caused the investigation to occur. Maybe I misunderstood, but I thought that's what he was saying.
That has not been contended in the underlying litigation, Your Honor. All that has been...
That's something new today.
Yes, Your Honor. Just to clarify, all that has been contended in the underlying litigation, all that's in evidence and in the record, is that the actual reason the U.S. Attorney's Office told Mr. Mock and his attorney that he was under investigation was this January 2013 phone call, to which there's no dispute that Officer Mock was off duty and had no reason for placing such a call, no official reason. But Mr. Mock has contended in this lawsuit that if he did tip off this criminal suspect, he must have done it inadvertently by confronting him in the fall of 2012 at the auto body shop out of anger after Officer Mock heard that this suspect's niece was alleging Officer Mock was involved with the suspect. And I would like to emphasize, too, Judge Spearman asked Mr. Fraley about his concession at oral argument that under Officer Mock's interpretation of the statute, that a defense must be provided in all matters to city employees, that under Officer Mock's interpretation, that would extend to providing a defense for a police officer who robbed a convenience store because he was in uniform and driving his patrol car at the time. That is not a reasonable interpretation of either the municipal code or the state statute. And I point the court to the Sanders case.
Does the illegal activity exception cover that situation? And perhaps counsel just hadn't thought about that at the time he answered the question.
I think that would be a second reason to that no defense should be provided. It's neither. It neither falls within the affirmative grant of coverage because it's not an official act, and in addition, it falls within the exception.
Insurance policy analysis. It's not in the grant. It's not in the exclusion.
Yeah, that's probably inartful selection of terms, but I think
I think it's something we understand.
And the last point I'd like to make is that Officer Mock has conceded, with respect to the exception, Officer Mock has conceded that if he had done the things he was accused of doing, that that would be unlawful, triggering the exception. For all these reasons, the court should affirm.
Real briefly, Your Honor, wanted to address the contentions on the part of Officer Mock. And specifically, he is contending that as far as the explanation provided by the U.S. Attorney's Office to his then-attorney, that it is incorrect. And here are the two reasons. One, he had the assistant chief that testified that he did not provide any information to Officer Mock, and that was Assistant Chief Pat Lowry. On top of that, Mr. Mock was not at the police station if he was ever provided any information by Assistant Chief Lowry. So he could not, is his contention, come into any information that he would have even vaguely relayed to Mr. Bryant in January of 2013.
Does it really matter if the allegation is founded or not? The whole question is what was the cause of why he was being possibly made a party to this to the litigation? That's the only issue, isn't it?
Well, yeah, certainly. And by way of the notice provided to Mr. Mock in September of 2013, he was alleged by the U.S. Attorney's Office, Ms. Yiting Wu, that he, Mr. Mock, found out information in his official scope and course of employment with the city of Kent, and he provided that information.
Yeah, so it's not the finding of the information that's at issue either. It's whether or not, it's if he passed this information on, whether or not that was in the course of his official duties. Is that correct?
I would take it a step further in that in terms of his official duty, because I think we all know that it's nearly impossible to prove a negative. But that's, in essence, what we have here.
Our next case this morning.